What's up, you guys? Welcome back to the RND Wrestling Podcast. I'm Ryan Brower.
And I am DJ Gruber. And today we will be discussing the first all-in pay-per-view for AEW and our top 10 AEW women's wrestlers as of today.
Definitely. And I'm very excited to be getting into that with you guys today. If you guys only knew how long it took us to get us set up today, you guys will probably notice on the YouTube feed that there is no video of us. We have been experiencing massive technical difficulties tonight.
It's been crazy, but at the end of the day, as long as we can get this episode out to you guys, that's what matters to us.
And what's important too is good audio, right? Like, I mean, you get, when it comes to a podcast, like, you can excuse bad video, but you can't really excuse bad audio. So as long as the audio is good, like, that's kind of the most important thing. Thank you guys. You know, for those who are checking us out on YouTube, thank you for your patience. And whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, we thank you guys for checking us out and listening to us here today. But DJ, to start us out, before we get into all the things that you had mentioned, I think there's something really serious that we have to address, you know, on only on episode 2 of this podcast. But, you know, I've been hearing from a lot of people online, people that we should take very seriously, because, of course, everything that people say on Twitter is 100% accurate.
Obviously.
Unfortunately, AEW is dying, from what I hear, and that they have no new TV deal. They only sold 50,000 tickets for All In. What else? Man, it just, this company is in a wreck, man. Like, all they do is put on heatless bangers, people call them on Twitter.
Cry me a river. Yeah, you get my reference, but cry me a river, because I am sorry, AEW is in its own world. They are selling out places. They're hotter than ever right now. Just because they are not one company doesn't mean they're not the same. Each pro wrestling company is meant to be different. Am I right here? Like,
yep.
Like, seriously, are we not supposed to, you know, have two same companies, or, you know, and these are supposed to be same like AEW? Like,
they're supposed to be different.
Every company is supposed to be unique and different. Like, that's why we are talking about AEW right now, honestly.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, yeah, all the people with the bad faith takes, whether they be intentional or whether you're just stirring the pot, screw you guys. Because I tell you what, man, like, look, listen, I got no problem. I mean, we talked about this last time, right? Like, I'm not a huge fan of the WWE products right now, but I got no problem for people that follow it. And you know what I'm saying? And like, look, if WWE is your cup of tea, that's all cool and all. But like, if you are, well, WWE is my only cup of tea, and that's the only wrestling that's allowed to exist in every other company, especially AEW, has to die, I don't got time for you.
Well, to add to, like, we're just discussing why we like AEW so much, and we respect anyone who may not like us or, you know, disagrees with us. But at the end of the day, we're just two guys who love pro wrestling and just want to express our opinions at the end of the day, right?
And it's not even just about that too, but it's like, when you're a wrestling fan that's like wishing for a wrestling company to die, you're basically wishing for hundreds, if not thousands, of people to lose their jobs and for people to stop being able to provide for their families. Like, whether that be what you're intentionally doing or not, it's what you're doing. So yeah, no, just kind of annoying. I thought I'd just bring this up at the start because I thought it was funny. Just like, over these past couple months, I've seen so many bad faith AEW takes and stuff. And it's like, look, AEW has had their crap moments, but 2024, you know, has been a really good year for them. Have they sold all the tickets in the world that they need to? You know, obviously, you know, they could do better with that. But in terms of like the in-ring product and the shows themselves, it's like, I honestly think that besides like 2021, this is probably their best year, in my opinion.
Well, to just add on to what Ryan is saying here, you know, they're not going to have their good days. Everyone's got bad days. We're not perfect. But as long as they keep putting out good matches and with the stars that they have, like, I will always be invested in them. Like, is there ever a Dynamite when I'm like, okay, that wasn't the best, but I'm like, no, I'm not going to switch with them because I like AEW. And at the end of the day, they're going to do what they need to do. And if it's a crappy thing, then so be it.
So a lot has happened in the AEW world on like a, you know, a positive note. And yeah, I mean, you got All In, you got All Out. That happened recently. Do you got any thoughts, DJ, on those pay-per-views?
I mean, I personally liked them all. Like, those two pay-per-views alone showed why AEW isn't struggling and why, you know, they're going to be here for a long time, because they showed that they have the stars to, you know, have long-term effect on the company. They showed why they can push good storytelling and why they can entertain a crowd. And I just really liked both. I came away from both pay-per-views very impressed. I liked the matches. I liked the booking. And what makes a good booking is a good story. And I generally think both pay-per-views had it. If anything else, just, you know, keep pushing the younger superstars. But AEW is working on it right now with the roster that they have. Just keep working. And I feel like they're at that consistent point in the year so far.
Definitely. And I think, you know, for me, I really enjoyed both pay-per-views. I liked a lot of the matches and, you know, obviously seeing Bryan win the world championship, just absolutely incredible. Will Ospreay continuing to prove why he is the best wrestler on the frickin' planet. And not even just on those two pay-per-views, but, you know, at the time of this recording, we're a few days removed from Grand Slam, and Will Ospreay just incredible, incredible tag match with the Bucks.
The fact that we can are seeing Will Ospreay on AEW right now amazes me, because, you know, he could be in New Japan, WWE, or any other company. The fact that we get to see him every Wednesday night just amazes me, because I have never seen a wrestler like that in my life, and I am just loving the run he's on right now. I am loving the run Bryan Danielson's having right now. Very inspirational. Like, with these veteran superstars, I'm just very thankful to see them, because, like we all know, you never know when their time is coming up. So I'm just thankful to enjoy every Wednesday night with these superstars that they have.
There were actually a couple more things that I wanted to talk with you about before we get into our main points.
I kind of wanted to bring up one. It's not on a positive note, but
sure,
it's on a recent tag team that I have a feeling they're leaving. But, you know, so I probably mentioned this in the first episode, but I'm a big fan of the Lucha Bros in the tag team division. But recently, from what me and Ryan have seen on the internet from reliable sources, they are going to be leaving to go to the WWE. And at first it sucks, because, you know, they've really developed this AEW tag team division to be one of the best in pro wrestling, I think. And I've always believed that since 2019, they've had the best division. But like in the business, man, all good things have to come to an end. And it's sad to say the least. And I wish them the best, but I wish they were staying. I'm not going to lie. I wish they would stay, because I think they could have done more.
Yeah, man, to kind of piggyback off of that a little bit, you know, obviously I'm a little heartbroken by it to see them go. But I will say that if they are going where we believe that they are going, the Federation, a.k.a. the WWE, are going to be very lucky to have them. I wish them both nothing but the best. I know there have been talks of potentially Rey Fénix having to serve more time on his contract due to the fact that he was injured for a little while. So I don't think anything has necessarily been concrete on that yet at the time of this recording. So it might just be Penta that's going over first, and Fénix might be going later. To everybody that might be complaining that Tony Khan isn't going to let Rey Fénix out of his contract, if he doesn't, Tony Khan has every right to do that, just like WWE has done with all of their superstars for the last couple of decades. So this is nothing new. Don't try and pin this on Tony Khan and be like, oh, Tony Khan is a bad guy. That's how this stuff works. You get injured, you're on a contract, you are able to, as a promoter, as a head of a company, to be able to extend that contract because they were not able to fulfill said contract because they were injured.
Well, to piggyback off of you too, it's the life of being a pro wrestler. You know, you sign these contracts, you get injured. It's the way life goes. Does it suck? Yes, but at the end of the day, it's a business, and I'm sure they're all trying to make good business decisions for themselves and the company.
Another thing that I wanted to get into with you as well is the 2024 Continental Classic. Now, we don't know yet who is going to all be in this tournament.
We can probably name two that are going to be in it.
How so?
I think they were in a match together, but it must have been a trios title match, but yeah. It was Okada. I think Okada and Takeshita will be in it.
Oh, of course, yes.
Because those are two of the hottest stars, I think, right now in All Elite. And I think if they do get the time to be in a singles match, dude, that's going to tear the house down, I swear.
This is my big pitch for you. I've got in Block A, I've got Kazuchika Okada, Kyle O'Reilly, Claudio Castagnoli, Roderick Strong, Hook, and Kyle Fletcher. And then in Block B, you've got Will Ospreay, Ricochet, Pac, Dax Harwood, Daniel Garcia, and Kenosuke Takeshita.
I like that Dax Harwood there because he has been putting on some good singles matches as of lately.
So I actually had a lot in mind when I was putting together this bracket. So the first one was keep Okada and Takeshita separate because that will be like the finals of the Continental Classic. But I also wanted to add like some cool things in there as well. Like obviously having Will Ospreay in there, like, yes, freaking please.
What about OC, you know, because what's a bracket without OC or Mark Briscoe, you know?
There's so many people you could do, but part of my thinking as well was like, okay, like you could have Will Ospreay and Ricochet having more like banger matches in there. Maybe we even have it where like they tie in points at the end. So like they have to have like a second match in the tournament or whatever. I don't know, but just Will Ospreay and Ricochet fighting forever. Yes, please. My big pitch for Block A with Okada. Okada beats everybody in Block A except Kyle Fletcher. Because if you on Dynamite a couple weeks ago, Okada fought Fletcher and Fletcher came very close to beating him. So in the second matchup that they have, I'm not even saying that Fletcher has to beat Okada, but maybe it ends in a draw. And that's the only person that Okada can't put away because Fletcher got better since the last time that they fought.
Well, another thing that I can add in here, the Young Bucks could, you know, probably help him out here because, you know, they want to keep the titles with him.
Right, but remember with the Continental Classic as well, like, you, there's no outside interference. That's, like, part of the rules with this belt and with this tournament is there's not allowed to be outside interference.
I don't know, man. The Young Bucks, they can, but
I guess if they are the EVPs, they could, I guess, be like, oh, hey, we're overriding this rule for us. We're the EVPs, like, screw you.
But then again, Christopher Daniels can just come in and be like, Tony Khan told me this, and you guys can't do it. Screw yourselves.
Sure. So yeah, just little stuff right there that I wanted to talk about. But should we perhaps transition that into the main thing that we came here to talk about today?
Yes, we sure can. We are going to be discussing with you guys the first ever pay-per-view on AEW.
This pay-per-view was like the origins of AEW. Now, I had given DJ a DVD for this to watch because I had purchased it online. And little did I realize, though, that there were actually a couple things that they left out of the DVD, which kind of stinks. So thank you, AEW, for that. Now I'm going to have to go in and like explain some things for DJ here because he didn't watch All In when it first happened. But you know what, DJ? I am actually really curious. Like, give me your overall thoughts because you had never seen the show before, right?
I watched it for the first time when you gave him my DVD. And let me just say, I was a little weirded out because I didn't know that all the AEW titles weren't there yet. And let me just say, it was unique, but also very surprising and exciting. We will get to that later.
So when it comes to this pay-per-view, though, this was the origins of AEW. And this was a big deal because this was before AEW was ever announced. This was just like, this was off of a bet that Cody had with Dave Meltzer. Cody and the Bucks were like, well, we can sell out a venue full of like, you know, 10,000 tickets or whatever. And they ended up doing it in like 30 minutes. And that was without like any big wrestling names besides just Cody and the Bucks.
Hashtag read the Young Bucks book. That book goes into depth about how the origins of AEW started. I read it all, and let me just say, it is one of the best pro wrestling books you'll ever read.
Now, I'll admit, this first match that we're going to talk about here on this card, I actually had no idea that it was even on the card. I must have missed this the first time that I watched this show, because I always remember tuning into the show and seeing, like, the first thing I saw was Christopher Daniels and Stephen Amell. I didn't know that MJF had a presence on this card.
This was the really beginning of MJF. And at that moment, he was, you know, a mid guy at best. And sure enough, he did end up losing the match, but you could see signs of him becoming a decent heel because, like, he's doing the Ric Flair motions and all that. He's doing his, you know, gimmicks, his acting. And you could see throughout the match, like, oh, AEW's got something going here. I want to find out more about him. And even if he loses, I'm like, oh my goodness, he could be something in the future. Looking back at it now, it's like, man, they really did do good with him now.
Yeah, and again, this was like before AEW was even a thing. Like, again, this was just them doing this bet of like, hey, we can sell out this show. This was just like a standalone show at the time. And having them start out with someone like so young in MJF, like, I just felt like showed you the confidence that they had in him to go out there and do what he does best. and being that heel, being that scumbag. You had Ian Riccaboni, Excalibur, and Don Callis on commentary for this pay-per-view, which is a crazy lineup.
It was funny to me watching this again, how Don Callis was on commentary.
Yeah, Don Callis is a commentator. Yeah.
Having Excalibur on commentary was the best decision, in my opinion. He's like one of the best play-by-play announcers, I feel like.
I found it funny when Excalibur called MJF MJF. That must have been like a joke at the time that like I don't remember.
Yeah, he was like, he had like a whole discussion about how he wanted to call MJF this, but when he was actually called this, it was kind of interesting to hear because I never heard that before.
Yeah, and a lot of the match too was like MJF targeting Matt Cross's shoulder, really putting over Matt Cross as like a, you know, you want to see him like as a sympathetic baby face, like he's getting worked over, he's at a disadvantage with his arm hurting. But even still, man, like MJF, he hits him with that heat sinker, Cross kicked out of that. That freaking springboard, the finish of the match was fantastic with that springboard cutter, the shooting star, and Matt Cross had picked up the victory, man. Like a fun little opening match to start out the pay-per-view.
It really was, and it really did show how much faith AEW had in MJF.
So the next match that we're going to get into here is Christopher Daniels versus Stephen Amell, aka the Green Arrow from the CW, which is fantastic. Now, listen, I remember when All In was going on, I remember like hearing that Stephen Amell was going to be a part of this. And for me, like that was kind of crazy. Now, listen, I'm not an Arrow fan, to be honest. Like I wasn't like all the CW shows that were on, like The Flash and Arrow, I didn't really get into any of those. But I knew that Stephen Amell was Arrow. I knew having him in wrestling was a big deal. And he had like a couple of matches before this, like even in WWE, remember he teamed with Neville. Do you remember this at all?
I remember the WWE one.
Yeah, that's okay, because it was Neville and Amell versus King Barrett and Stardust, aka Cody, I believe it was SummerSlam. And then the second match that he had, teaming up with Bullet Club to take on Flip Gordon and SCU. So I believe this was his third ever professional wrestling match against Christopher Daniels. And then they also had Jerry Lynn as the special guest referee. Shout out to Jerry Lynn. Stephen Amell came out to Bullet Club's music, which is fantastic. I guess he was part of Bullet Club at that time, which is kind of cool. The coast to coast spot, the elbow drop through the table where Daniels got out of the way. That one was crazy. I love Jerry Lynn throwing them both back in the ring. Is like, no, no, we're not ending this on a count out. We're putting this both in the ring. I would like to remind people, by this time in wrestling, I was like tapped out, man. I was so done with WWE at this time. So like watching through this show, this is what made me realize like, oh no, I actually still do like wrestling. I just don't like WWE.
Watching that show made me realize that there is more in the world of pro wrestling than what they had to offer at the time.
Daniels ends up winning this match, Christopher Daniels, with the best moonsault ever. There was a part of me that was kind of hoping that Stephen Amell would have won, like, you know, like having the celebrity on there. Like, I get it was the right thing to do to have Christopher Daniels win as he's like an active wrestler, you know, because I always feel weird about that. Like when part-timers or celebrities come in and then they win the match and then it's like, okay, but they're not the ones that are on TV every week. They're not the ones who have to then go forward without having to worry about like wins and losses and things like that. At this point in the show, Don Callis had left commentary and we had Tennille Dashwood and Mandy Leon joining commentary. Now, I'll admit, I don't know who Mandy Leon is, but Tennille Dashwood, I know very well, formerly known as Emma in WWE. And she was a big deal at that time. Like when she had that run as Tennille Dashwood, like she was killing it. Like, cause the whole Emma thing didn't really work out for her in WWE. But when she left and started doing things in like Ring of Honor and Impact and the surrounding promotions, like she really did make a name for herself at that time. So I thought it was cool that they got her on board there.
Since we're talking about the woman, why not get into that Fatal 4-Way match? That was pretty awesome, in my opinion. Well, I would like to point out first a little thing. When Britt Baker came out first, did you realize whose theme that was that she had? it was Adam Cole's ROH.
Adam Cole's old ROH theme. Yeah, that was the nice tribute.
Like, I remember hearing it, and I'm like, oh my gosh. My gosh, she did not. That was pretty awesome to hear. Britt Baker, Tessa Blanchard,
Chelsea Green, and also Madison Rain as well. I'll point out that that's the four women. But yeah, man. So at this time, I'm trying to remember through it. So when I watched through this show the first time, the only people that I knew in this match were Madison Rain and Chelsea Green. And that was because of Impact. Like at the time, I believe Chelsea, before she became Chelsea, she was Laura Van Ness. And I was watching a little bit of Impact at that time when she was going through that run. And obviously Madison Rain was a big part of the Knockouts division for a long time as well. Britt Baker was a name that I had never even heard of at this point, which is very ironic considering that like she ends up being the first woman signed by AEW.
When I saw Britt Baker come out for the first time, I'm like, man, she has an entrance and she's confident in what she does. Like, I'm invested in her. Like, she just has an amazing aura. And man, I was just very intrigued from the very beginning.
There was a point in this match where the crowd all stood up and were chanting, "This is awesome." So I think it just goes to show you, like, the work that these four women were putting into this match was paying off. So the only thing about this match that I found very weird was the finish. And that was like Tessa had won, like, but it looked like Britt was going to stop the count. But then it looked like Britt stopped it. But then the ref still rang the bell. So that was like the only part of the match where I was like, what was this about?
Yeah, I was watching it. I'm like, okay, so did she win or was it a breakup? Like, that was a confusing part for me, if anything.
Yeah, because I remember I was watching and I'm like, oh, Britt broke it. Wait, the bell rang. What? Britt broke it up, I thought. You know, like, so that was the only bit of the match where I was like, oh, you know. But the other, like, you know, 10, 15 minutes of it for however long they fought for, like, that was incredible. But now we move on. Brett Tiering, I believe, joined the commentary team as Tennille and Mandy left. Okay, here we go. So now we're going to get into one of the big matches that came out of this pay-per-view, and that is Cody Rhodes versus Nick Aldis.
I find it very funny to see what Nick Aldis is doing today and to think that he was a big star when this came out.
Yes, there's actually going to be a lot of people, and it's actually going to be very curious to see what happens as time goes on, but there's going to be a lot of people, especially WWE fans, that only know Nick Aldis as the SmackDown general manager. But Nick Aldis was a very accomplished wrestler in Impact Wrestling, along with like the NWA as well. He was a very big representative for the NWA when that was like starting to become a popular thing again. And he was like their guy and he was their world champion. And I loved the story going into this match because Cody Rhodes looking to win the title that his father won. And this is only one of two title matches here on this show. And I thought that this was going to be the main event, first time watching this show. But curiously, they put it like middle of the card.
It was very awesome to see him come out with his, you know, team and to come out with the American theme. That was just a thing of beauty to see. And Cody was honestly having the time of his life right there, honestly.
Nick Aldis had a team too. And there were actually people here that I didn't realize that were a part of his team. He had Jeff Jarrett. He had Sean Daivari. And he had Samuel Shaw, which for WWE fans is Dexter Lumis. I was like, what?
I found that hard to believe because I thought he was with WWE at the time. But to see him ringside with Nick Aldis, I'm like, man, okay, we're getting somewhere now.
A lot can happen in a short amount of time, man. People keep going different places. And yeah, man, it was crazy. But again, this had a boxing match feel. And this was for the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship, the 10 pounds of gold. Earl Hebner was the referee, which absolutely fantastic. He did almost hit Aldis with the belt, I wrote down, which I thought was very funny. Crowd chanting yoga for DDP, very, very funny. He eventually hit the diamond cutter too to Daivari in the middle of the match, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, this was a crazy match. I think if I have this correct, I think this was the longest match on the card. correction, this was the second longest match on the card. I forgot there was a match that went way too long on this card. Nick Aldis and Cody Rhodes, the second longest match on this card, going at about 22 minutes. Shortest one, fun fact, was the Matt Cross MJF match, which meant about 9 minutes, 23 seconds. And you know what's even crazier is like the main event, and we'll get to that, had so much time cut from it, and you could tell like it was like a massive sprint.
Watching the main event, I felt like they rushed it, but now that we're talking about this, I'm like, yeah, it makes sense now.
But we'll get to it. But yeah, Cody Rhodes, man, like what a freaking match this was. Like him using the figure four, him bleeding in the face, because he was the original guy that would always bleed before John Moxley made it cool. So it was just, oh my gosh, man, the powerbomb pin into the clover leaf. I love submission transitions like that. Oh my gosh, I love that kind of stuff. The moment when Brandy was pleading with him to stop, like Cody to stop, like it's okay, you don't have to do this, you don't have to prove anything, you know, and Cody just having that will to continue on. I actually thought the first time that they did this match, like watching this for the first time, I thought they were going to do the Bret Hart Stone Cold Steve Austin finish from WrestleMania, where like Bret Hart has Stone Cold in the submission, in the sharpshooter, and Austin's just like bleeding in the face, but he's not tapping out. And eventually it ends up leading to him passing out because he's been in the hold for so long, and Bret Hart ends up winning the match. But for a lot of people, that was like what made Stone Cold was starting with like that match. And I kind of thought they were going to do the same thing here with Cody. That's not what ended up happening. We see like, you know, disaster kick into the crossroads. Aldis kicks out. Nick goes for a cradle pin. Cody counters that with a pin of his own and ends up winning the match. You see Brandy crying at the end. Cody also starts crying.
It was an amazing match, but one thing that was crazy was when Brandy was trying to save Cody, and yet Nick Aldis.
Oh, yes, yes.
Nick Aldis dove and hit her, and that was probably the crazy moment of the night.
Thank you for bringing up that spot. I almost forgot about that. That was, oh my gosh, that was like one of my favorite parts of the match, too.
How can we forget it? Because that was like the epic part of the night, honestly.
Well, I almost did. But yeah, man, oh my gosh. And what a moment for Cody being able to win the NWA championship on his show. Now, eventually, I believe it was like a couple months later, at an NWA show, that Nick Aldis won back the title from Cody. But to be able to give Cody this moment right here, man, like what a moment.
It was very awesome to see, and to see Cody Rhodes have that kind of match, it was like, man, Cody Rhodes is the real deal.
Exactly. And I believe it was definitely the result that needed to happen. Like, forget about the fact like, oh, this is the Elite show or whatever. Like having that moment for Cody, who, you know, it very quickly becoming this, you know, sympathetic babyface. And you're going to see at the start of AEW as well, is Cody has that connection with the crowd, that emotional connection. And yeah, man, it carries over to what he does in WWE as well. So yeah, man, very, very cool. Don Callis ends up returning to commentary after this match. Man, he should have been there for that match. That'd have been crazy. But then we get Joey Janela versus Hangman Page in a Chicago street fight.
Joey Janela. Man, those early days with Joey Janela, I'll never forget.
Yeah, man, he was like crucial in the early days of like pre-AEW and going into like the start of AEW, like the match he has with Mox and whatnot too. So yeah, definitely.
Watching the DVD, I totally didn't realize that Penelope was not with Kip Sabian, because when...
No, that originally her and Joey were a thing first.
I totally forgot about that, because watching AEW when it was first on television, I always assumed her and Kip went in together, but watching this again, I learned something new.
I love that they had a Cracker Barrel in there, which makes so much sense.
Thank you for bringing that up, because I saw that and I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. Because, you know, Cracker Barrel was sponsoring something like that. And to use that barrel in that street fight, that was pretty amazing.
I remember that being a spot at the first All Out. So when I saw that here, I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot that that was a thing here, too.
Another good moment from this match was when Penelope was trying to interfere and, you know, her and Hangman are going at it and all that. Oh my goodness. I just won't forget when Hangman super kicked Penelope. I'm like, no way he did that. Like, that is something I was not used to. And to see that was just like totally different.
Yeah, man. And there were a lot of crazy like ladder spots or like weapon spots too. You see the burning hammer onto the ladder. You got the elbow drop through the table, you know, Joey to Hangman. There was a powerbomb off of ramp through the table. Like, there were so many different moments in this match with like the use of weapons, which I think was very cool. Like having a a gimmicked match on this show, considering a lot of them were like, you know, normal one-on-one or tag matches.
At the end of the match when Heyman won, you could hear commentary say like he was willing to commit murder to win that match. And to me, it kind of thinks of Heyman today, because if you look at the run he's having now, it's like, wow, he was kind of foreshadowing what he could do as a heel when he's in an extreme situation. And that match just showed like how he's willing to, you know, go to the point of almost murdering someone to win a match. That was just impressive for me to watch.
And he ends up hitting the Deadeye, which at the time I believe was called the Rites of Passage, off of the ladder through a table. That was crazy.
Not only that, but like doing a buckshot from the crowd into the outside of the ring, that was pretty cool to see too, if you didn't catch that.
Hangman wins the match. Now, kids, this is the time for good old Ryan to educate you here, for those that are watching the DVD. And I'm going to educate DJ here, because they didn't show what came next on this pay-per-view. So there was a storyline at this time going into BTE between Hangman Page and Joey Ryan. And Joey Ryan, how do I describe him? His gimmick at the time was that he had a strong putting it lightly. That was like his offense in the match was very below the belt. Like, people would go to grab it and he would like flip them over just using his crotch. I swear to you, I'm not making this up. So what the pay-per-view didn't show you was that after this match, the lights went out and there were a bunch of druids that came out onto the stage, all wearing dick outfits. They were known as the Dick Druids. And this was legit a thing. And then Joey Ryan came out and like beat the crap out of Hangman Page. When Chris and I watched this, like back in 2019, we thought it was the funniest shit, man. Dude, it was so crazy. We're like, oh my gosh, they're druids and they're what are these things? What? It was like we were laughing our butts off. It was the funniest thing. It was legit the funniest thing. Oh my gosh. Yeah, we could go on and on talking about the Dick Druids, but you know, unfortunately, we have to move on to the second championship match here on this card for the Ring of Honor World Championship. The world champion, Jay Lethal, defending the title against Flip Gordon, who won a battle royal on the pre-show to earn himself this opportunity.
Jay Lethal was a dominant ROH champion at the time, if I recall.
Yeah, he was like the guy in Ring of Honor for the longest time. Like, he was their John Cena. He was like their guy. And man, like, he was very, very successful at what he did, man. Like, and the people loved him, and multi-time Ring of Honor champion. Like, the dude was absolutely incredible. And like, you know, I know AEW doesn't always portray him, you know, like on screen and stuff, but the man is a really good wrestler.
Give him a match and you will see him be one of the more talented wrestlers in AEW, I believe.
I kept telling people like about AJ Styles when he was in TNA at the time, like AJ Styles could have been the Jay Lethal of TNA in the sense that like he could have been their guy. But you know, poor TNA management prevented that from happening.
It amazes me how much TNA or, you know, smaller companies could have been a bigger deal if not for management.
Yeah, if they didn't just drop the ball on it. They decided, you know what we're going to do, AJ? Not only are we not going to give you more money, but we're going to give you less money than you were making before. And he was like, what are you doing? Anyway, that's a whole nother thing for another time. We're moving on from that. But yeah, man, like, dude, talk about guys that were over on this card. Jay Lethal is another one. Massively over on this card, man. Everybody loved Jay Lethal. Flip Gordon was like, you know, a young prospect at the time. This match actually, I thought, was an underrated match on this card. What about you?
I personally liked it. Like, I never knew Jay Lethal before I watched this match. Well, I watched him AEW, but I didn't know his ROH side.
Sure.
But just seeing him be the ROH champion, it just reminded me how dominant he was and how AEW has, you know, one of the more deeper rosters, because Jay Lethal is probably one of the best wrestlers in AEW, honestly.
I love the, you know, the whole Mega Powers handshake thing at the start, because like the whole gimmick that Jay Lethal had in this match was his Black Machismo gimmick, which is like, you know, his version of Randy Savage. And I thought it found it funny when like Flip Gordon started doing the Hogan comeback too and everything, like very, very funny. The top rope cutter into the Lethal Injection, like unbelievable, man. And like Cody Rhodes said in that one AEW promo, the Lethal Injection is the one cutter in the business that people don't kick out of. Avoid.
That whole meme, that was probably the meme of the year, honestly.
Dude, Cody Rhodes, man, he had like 10 memes in that one promo. That man was like pontificating hard in the final days in his run of AEW. If for nothing else, because there comes a point where like the fans turn on Cody, and if I'm going to be honest, I was kind of one of those people too. But man, like every time that man came out there to like do like a pontificating promo, man, I always got so much enjoyment out of it. I'm like, dude, no one's doing it like this guy, like in the funniest way possible. Nobody was doing it like Cody Rhodes. And we can definitely get into this to another time as well. But like, I think the fans in AEW justifiably turned on Cody just based on things that were going on at the time.
I was one of those fans too, but like,
I still thought he was a good wrestler. Like I didn't hate him,
I didn't either, but you know, there comes a time, you know, when it's like, okay, we have to move on, but at the same time you appreciate what he did.
Yes, exactly. And I'll tell you what, Cody Rhodes is a massive Star Wars fan, so, and I'm also a huge Star Wars fan, so I feel like if I met Cody Rhodes in real life, him and I would get along real well, because we could have so much conversation, the two of us.
Then if he's a Star Wars fan, where are his Star Wars entrances? You know, like, why isn't he wearing a Darth Vader costume? Why isn't he having like a Star Wars music in his theme song or whatever? Or, you know,
yeah, like have some kind of gear or something made with like some kind of Star Wars tribute. Maybe he has done this before, but I've never seen it. So at the end of this match, we should probably get back into it. Jay Lethal retains the world championship, as I kind of expected would happen. I did think it would be kind of cool if Flip Gordon won the championship, but I also understand keeping it on Lethal, who again was such a dominant champion at this time. Bully Ray came out at the end of the match and took out Flip Gordon, who I believe they were feuding at the time. Colt Cabana comes out, makes the save, and then, you know, him and the two other guys, they triple powerbomb Bully through a table. Heel gets his comeuppance, and yeah, nice little moment for the three of them.
That was just awesome to see, and to see Bully Ray again and see Colt Cabana, it was just amazing to see how many stars were in that one match.
I was watching TNA. Like, I started watching TNA, or I think around like 2012, when like right as the Aces and Eights story was about to start. Oh. And I was a huge fan of that story. Like, I know like some people don't like the Aces and Eights stuff. I enjoyed it up until like once the reveal of Bully Ray being the leader was absolutely fantastic. I think like once Bully did reveal himself and like the Aces and Eights were in full force, but like all the members were revealed, I feel like it did start to go downhill from there. But everything leading up to that moment and Bully revealing himself, like in the lockdown cage match and everything with Jeff Hardy, oh my God, that was such a good, I love that.
We're gonna have to say this for another time, but like, we're going to have to like watch the highlights of Aces and Eights and like just see.
Oh, I would love that if we just like talk TNA like for one podcast, man. I'd be down for that.
Like maybe get your brother and a couple others on, but like to see the glory days of Aces and Eights and to see all that good stuff happen, that would just be awesome to talk about.
Our friend Miles would be a huge fan of that too, because he was like a big TNA fan, like even before we were. It's actually funny. I think he started, like he watched TNA back in like, oh, I want to say, I can't remember, I think like 2006, 2007. And I think he got out of it around the time that Chris and I started watching. Like we were in the trenches at completely different times. He like tagged out and we tagged in. So very crazy in that sense. Moving on, like I said, we can definitely talk about TNA at another time. This next match, I don't know about you, this was my match of the night.
Is it the one with Kenny Omega versus Penta?
Yes.
Oh, man, dude. I can't get into it enough how much, and I probably preached this enough with you and Christopher, but man, this was the Penta singles run that I wish they would have done in AEW for him.
Yeah, man, dude, Penta is a great singles competitor. And I think at the time, I'm trying to remember. So Kenny was the IWGP champion at this point, I'm pretty sure. And so because of that, this match felt like a foregone conclusion a little bit because of that. But I think Penta at some point does win the Impact World Championship. I don't know. I think it might have been after this, but I know that Penta was going on like a singles run at that time in TNA. TNA Impact, you know, like the same freaking thing, of course.
What am I, living under a rock? Because I would love to know and watch this.
Like I said, I had stopped watching TNA by that point, so I wouldn't have seen it. I know that, again, Penta was doing some crazy stuff, and he was known as Pentagon Jr. at this point, like not Pentagon El Cerro or whatever. But I'm pretty sure that this match took place like a couple of months after Omega beat Okada for the belt.
I didn't pay attention much to it at the time, but I think you're right because, you know, Omega was in Japan still at the time, right?
Yeah, so he was in New Japan for a long time. And like I had started getting into like New Japan stuff. Like I wasn't watching their weekly shows or anything like that, but I started like hearing about it, you know, obviously through Cody, through the Bucks, through Omega. And I remember like the whole thing at the time, like, Okada and Omega have like the first 6-star match or whatever it was. Like, and this is before what I knew, like what the star ratings thing was. So I was like, oh, they must have had like a really good match or whatever. And so then I kind of started following along like what they were doing. And then they had like him and Okada had like 4 different matches. And it was finally in the 4th match where Omega won the belt. So I think I want to say it was a couple months before this event. So Kenny Omega, like having the run of a lifetime right here and going into this again, kind of made it feel like a foregone conclusion. But my goodness, I'll be damned if they did not make me think that Pentagon was winning this match at several points.
I personally, I'm not trying to be biased here, but there are many times watching this match, I'm like, why didn't you give Penta the belt? Like, I love Kenny Omega. Don't get me wrong. Kenny is one of the greatest wrestlers that will go down in our time and all that. But man, I love Penta, man. Like, he's awesome in a tag team, but
singles run.
I loved him in a singles run. Like, the moment when Ray won the title, you know, a year or two ago, I just wish that happened to Penta.
Oh, the international title when Phoenix won the international title?
Yep. I wish that happened to Penta, that watching that match, but that did not happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, dude, like, even if they would have just given Penta, like, dude, give him the belt for, like, a month or two. Let him have, like, TV matches every single week defending the title and then eventually lose it to somebody.
Seriously, this man is a good singles guy. Give him a title for a month or a couple weeks. I don't care.
I would have been all for him beating Cody for the TNT title, like one of, like, 10 guys that I felt should have beat him for it.
We can talk about this another time for sure, yeah, but, yeah. Like, man, I just feel like they're... When we talk about missed opportunities and all that, I just feel like whenever Ray Phoenix was injured, they really could have pushed Penta to winning a title in AEW. But that's a talk for another time. But I will admit, as much as I knew the result, I was still very, very disappointed that they didn't give my boy Penta the title.
I also just want to clarify as well, I don't think that this was for the IWGP championship. This was just a straight one-on-one exhibition match. If Penta would have won, maybe that could have been a story that they set up, like, oh, okay, you know, you beat our champion Penta, like, why don't you come over to New Japan and we'll set up a title match for you. Like, they could have done something like that. But yeah, man, like this match, like I remember like him giving Pentagon 2 V triggers and then doing a powerbomb into the 3rd V trigger. Penta hit the package pile driver. Kenny kicked out of that. Don Callis was incredible on commentary in this match. He really put over Penta hard in this match. And, you know, that's one of my biggest things about because I know Callis was like a huge Omega supporter at the time as well. My biggest thing in wrestling is being able to put your opponent over and not just, you know, constantly saying like, oh, you suck and you're stupid and I'm going to beat you. No problem. This is going to be no sweat for me. And then when you lose, and then either way, it's like, okay, so then if you win, you beat a nobody. If you lose, you just lost to a nobody. But if you say like, yeah, man, look at it. Penta is at the top of his game tonight. Like, look at this. He's came in here with a set strategy and he is taking it to Omega. Like I've never seen anybody take it to him before. And that as a viewer makes you go, oh, wow. Like Penta's doing a really good job here. And then when Omega beats him, it's like, yeah, man, Omega just beat Penta at the top of his game. Well done, Omega. That's a huge deal for him.
To me, hearing Callis talk about Penta, it made me realize how much Lucha wrestling is a big deal and like how big of a deal they can be if they have someone like Penta. and neat matches like these, because
absolutely,
to me, I might be a little biased here, but I do think Penta is one of the top lucha wrestlers, and he showed it in this match. And hearing Callis talk about Penta the way he did, that was just amazing to watch.
Absolutely. Again, big fan of that. The package pile driver on the apron spot. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he just did that. And then eventually Kenny hit his own package pile driver. Penta kicked out at two and then hit the fourth V trigger of the match. I kept count of how many V triggers Kenny Omega did, because I was like, I know he did a bunch of them, but I kept track in my notes here when I was writing stuff down. So then Penta goes for a second package pile driver. Kenny kicks out at two. Crowd applauds and stand out. The crowd was already chanting holy shit before the match even started. So it just goes to show you that I wasn't just the one that thought this match was a big deal. The crowd in Chicago thought so too. V trigger number five to Penta. Poison Rana. Penta kicks out at two. Sixth V trigger, one wing angel. So they put, again, putting Penta over. This guy took six V triggers. And then the one wing angel nobody kicks out of. So like once Kenny hit that, I was like, okay, it's over. But six V triggers, my goodness. All right, get to the next part of it, DJ.
The lights go out, and then everyone's like, oh, what's happening?
What did you think was happening?
I honestly thought that Kenny was getting beat up by other Lucha Libres, whatever. But then I forget, because you and your brother were telling me this, so a special someone came.
Oh yeah.
The lights are back on. I'm like, no beat up? Oh, you know, I'm kind of bummed, because, you know, I expected, you know, like a full WWE, you know, beat up, whatever. But then all of a sudden I see the tattoos. I'm like, oh crap, that ain't Penta, because, you know, Penta's got two tattoos on both of his arms.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, who is this luchador? Who could this possibly be? And then the luchador hits a code breaker.
Right away, I'm like, no, no way they got him there. And then all of a sudden, he's like taking off the mask. I'm like, oh my gosh, we are taking off. This company is in new heights, because the man, the champion, Chris
Jericho. Your guy, your favorite wrestler in AEW.
Yep, you know it. The champion came, and I'm like, heck yeah, baby. Oh, man, that made me so happy. Like, you and your brother showed me this before, but watching it, I'm just like, and that is why I love AEW.
So when I watched this match the first time, like, immediately I knew, like, okay, this is not, this isn't Penta. Like, it's clearly not him, but who is it? And then he hits the code breaker, and I'm like, I just start laughing. I'm like, well, I wonder who could that be? And then we went crazy, me and my brother did at the time, because they were like, oh my God, they got Jericho for this. And he was basically just like, hey, Kenny, I'll see you on the Jericho Cruise. So it was basically like him trying to promote the Jericho Cruise, which is, I think that was the first ever cruise that they had did at the time. Me and Chris have always talked about, like, man, like, could we go on one of these Jericho cruises at some point?
I'm gonna ask you that too, like, how can we get on one, because that would just be fun to do someday.
I think it would be cool. The only thing is, I don't know how I feel being out at sea. That's the only thing that stops me.
I get you. I think it would just be an awesome adventure, first of all, and I just think to be on a Jericho cruise and to see pro wrestling on the water,
that on a cruise, that would be very cool. Yes,
that would be very cool, and we can work it out, and we're gonna have to put
we've talked about it before, like, we could definitely do it at some point.
I might have to search this up after this episode, honestly. We might have to talk about this more in depth.
Yeah, we'll talk this off when we're off air about this. We then have the longest match on the card, and believe me, it showed.
This match just made me love this special wrestler even more.
And this was, while it was long, it was still a good match. And that was Marty Scurll taking on the freaking guy in New Japan, and that is Kazuchika Okada. And at the time, American wrestling fans are spoiled at this point, because we have so many great wrestlers on AEW right now that, like, it's like, oh my gosh, like, this is crazy. Like, you know, they're like, oh yeah, we get like Okada every week, and we get Ospreay and all these other guys.
But what they haven't realized is the dominant Okada in New Japan.
It was a big deal, and people went crazy for it.
Just watching that match made me realize how thankful we are to have these kind of stars in AEW, because you do not see these stars every day. And the fact that we have an elite superstar like Okada on our show, it's just like, Tony Khan, please book him right, because he is such a good wrestler. Please don't mess them up. I know we won't, but you know, as a fan, I hope not.
Yeah, definitely. So one of my favorite spots was actually toward the beginning of this match. There were a bunch of back and forth pins, and then like Marty hits a powerbomb and Okada kicks out. I really enjoyed that. I will say this all the time, but Okada has the best dropkick in the game ever in wrestling. My brother will say it's Randy Orton, but for me, it's Okada. It's still always crazy to me that like Okada's setup move is the tombstone. Like, I'm not even mad at it, because like, I know some people get like offended over it, like, oh, why is it not his finisher? Like, no, bro, like, whatever. Like, people, it's wrestling, just like, whatever. Everybody have, this is the way I always look at it, right? Like, everybody has their specialty move. Like, what's a good example? Like Jake Roberts, for example, right? Jake the Snake Roberts, his finisher was the DDT. But the thing with the DDT, especially nowadays, is everybody uses it. Mm-hmm. But the way that I like to look at it is, well, you know what? Jake Roberts was, the DDT was like his thing. He perfected that move so well that it was able to put opponents away. That's the way that I like to look at it. So when it comes to like the tombstone and Okada, I think that Okada in his version of events, right? Because the way that he always does his thing, it's like, okay, I hit you with the tombstone and then I immediately pick you up and smack you across the face with the Rainmaker. And that's like his finishing sequence. That's his specialty. So I don't ever, like, when he hits the tombstone, for me, it's like I don't get bothered by it, by other people do. I loved that Marty Scurll locked in the cross face chicken wing several times, but Okada did not tap. There was a ref bump at one point, countered Rainmaker by opening up the umbrella. That spot, very funny. He hits Okada with the umbrella and a Rainmaker of his own, does Marty Scurll. And like, this was probably like the craziest 2.9 to 9 to 9 kick out on the whole show, because I legit was like, he's going to beat Okada. Oh my gosh, what a kick out. Okada then hits the Rainmaker, but he can't capitalize. But then Marty ends up asking for it again. So Okada's like, okay, I'll hit you with a second Rainmaker and then a third. And Okada wins. Very, very good match. But it went long. And I think there were actually a couple matches that went long on the show from what I remember. I think Kenny and Penta was another one. But what it meant was, for this main event match, that there were only 11 minutes left. This match was supposed to be given 30 minutes, DJ.
Seriously?
And it only had 11. So basically what the six stars said was, okay, we're just going to take all the crazy spots that we had set up in 30 minutes, and we're just going to do them all like back to back to back. Because when you are watching this match, it is a massive sprint that like, it just feels like chaos. You could barely tell what was going on at times. But for those who don't know, it was the Young Bucks and Kota Ibushi taking on Rey Mysterio, you heard that right, folks, Rey Fénix, and Bandido.
That was amazing to see Rey Mysterio not in WWE.
And they tried to get him. WWE was trying to get him signed at that time. Like, they legit were like, hey, can you come back to WWE? Because they were trying to get him away from All In. And Rey was like, I mean, I'll come back, but I'm going to do this first. So thank you, Rey, for doing that.
Shout out to Rey Mysterio for wearing the Wolverine outfit.
Yes. Okay, so 2019, that would have been around the time of Logan, right? Like, yeah, that movie. Dude, I just recently watched Logan. Like, I was watching through a lot of the old X-Men movies for the first time ever, because I never seen them. Yeah, man. They were all okay. Like, if I'm being honest, I was like, I didn't really have like the personal connection to it, but like, I love Hugh Jackman Wolverine. But yeah, like, most of the movies, like, they were okay. Like, the one where he was in Japan, I thought that one was kind of cool. Freaking Logan, man. Holy crap, what a superhero movie that was. Have you seen that one?
Oh, I saw it, and let me just say that made me love Hugh Jackman as Wolverine more before seeing Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yes, absolutely. And Deadpool and Wolverine was absolutely fantastic as well. Okay, but maybe that explains the Wolverine gear by Rey Mysterio. But like, man, there was so much going on. Oh yeah, so the Young Bucks were also wearing a couple of titles, and I had to figure out which ones they were.
I had to ask you about that too, because I'm like, are they ROH champ?
Yes. So I dug into this, and they were the IWGP tag team champions, which is like New Japan. That's right. And then they were Ring of Honor Trios champions with Cody.
Oh my gosh. I forgot they were Trios champs with Cody, because that was the time when they were dominating the circuit.
There was a moment at the start of the show. Again, they didn't show this on the DVD, but the three of them do come out, and apparently they all had their Trios belts with them. Which I had completely forgotten about, but I had to go back and look at that to see this. But yeah, man, like we're seeing here, like when you look at like Rey Mysterio, Rey Fénix, and Bandido, three great wrestlers those are. The first standoff is Matt Jackson and Bandido. Rey Fénix has a hot tag almost immediately because we've only got 11 minutes, brother. We got to go quickly. There is a moment on the second Rey Fénix has like 20 hot tags in this match, but on the second one, you can hear someone saying, "We got to go home. We got to go home." So, and I didn't pick up on this until I watched the DVD. So I was like, okay, like even like you can tell that they're rushing and trying to get things done. Like we get Ibushi versus Bandido at one point. That's a dream match. And Kota Ibushi, I'm a massive Kota Ibushi fan as well. The Golden Lovers, him and Kenny as well. Absolutely fantastic. There's a Nick Jackson hot tag. Rey Mysterio does a springboard moonsault, and then Fénix does a spinning dive. Bandido does one too, and then Matt Jackson jumps off the stage. This is all like in like very fast effect because Fénix barely gets there. Kota gets there too late, and Rey Mysterio stood there confused.
Man, I wrote down in my notes, I don't know if this is the right description right here, but this was a good match of showing tendon movements with all the flips, kicks, and all that. Like,
yeah,
this was a good definition of that match. Like, it was amazing.
And all six men had their backs against the wall. And for the 11 minutes that we got, I thought this was a very fantastic match.
I find it hard to believe that it was 11 minutes because I was watching that match. I'm like, okay, they made it short, but I wouldn't think it was 11 minutes. I would have thought like 15 at the least or 20.
Once again, time was of the essence for them. But like there was, again, so much that happened. The triple Hurricane Rana spot by Bandido, absolutely loved that. Rey Mysterio got a hot tag. The assisted Hurricane Rana to Nick Jackson by Bandido with the assist from Fénix. Oh my gosh, amazing. And then the 619 into the Canadian Destroyer, Poison Rana, Frog splash, Matt kicks out. Holy crap, what a spot.
That was amazing to watch. Like the Lucha Libres fighting the Young Bucks and Kota Ibushi. Like this was a match that you were asking for as a wrestling fan. I'm not going to say it enough. This was probably one of the best trios matches in a long time.
And then I noticed it again. I heard someone talking right after the top rope fallaway slam from Bandido to who would it have been? Matt Jackson, I believe. And you hear someone saying, "Go home right now." So the Elite panics a little bit. You can see that. They're able to pick it up quickly. Like Fénix breaks up the pin, but then he immediately rolls out. The Bucks hit the Meltzer driver. The Elite win, and the show ends like immediately. It was like, pin the match. Thank you for watching, and cut.
That was amazing watch. Like, yes, it was a little bit abrupt, but man, that was just probably the best pay-per-view to start out AEW, honestly.
Yeah, for sure. And again, this was before AEW was ever announced. And I remember after the show, I'm like, wow, like I could legit watch a wrestling show like this every week if this is what they wanted to do. I think after the show, like Cody, the Bucks, Kenny, they were all out there and they had teased an all-in too. So it was like, oh, okay, like we're going to get another one of these shows. Like that's pretty cool. But then it's not long after this, a couple months after this, where they do that thing on BTE where like Hangman, Cody, the Bucks, they all have their phones out and they're like, y'all getting the same message I am? Yeah. And they all put their phones out and there's the AEW logo on it. And it confirmed like they were going to be doing their own show.
That was awesome to watch because as a wrestling fan, I knew deep down, like, this is the breath of fresh air we're talking here. And I remember the three of us, you, me, and your brother were like, this is what we've been waiting for. Let's enjoy it because you never know when this will come again, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And like this for me is always going to be like a memorable show, like one of my favorite wrestling shows ever to watch. Like I remember thinking that at the time, and even when I went back and watched it now, it was a very, very easy show to watch through. You had 9 matches on the card. I don't even think there was anything on this show that I didn't enjoy. Like the only complaints that I could have is like the Scroll Okada match maybe went a little too long. The finish to the women's match was a little confusing, but like other than that, it was like, it, to me, it was like a perfect show. There was really nothing else to complain about.
I mean, even with the long matches, I'm like, I don't care because all the matches were good with the amount of time they had. And I think they made it work. And to me, that was probably the most fun show to watch as a wrestling fan. And even with the short matches and the long matches, I still enjoyed it. I didn't feel weighed down or like, oh, I got to do this or that. I'm like, I will watch it all the way through and I will see what happens.
And it definitely reminded me that I still enjoyed wrestling. Ollie Davis from WrestleTalk actually put it greatly in his review when he said that this was a celebration of non-WWE wrestling, because you had your like Ring of Honor style matches. You had your Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada New Japan style matches, you know. Everybody got to go out there. You had the big like PWG trios match. Everyone got to do their style of wrestling.
You had the surprise Jericho coming out.
Yes, you had the famous wrestling surprises, and you had the famous celebrity on there. Like, it was such a perfect show in that sense. And there weren't too many stories going into this either. So once again, proving you guys that it sometimes it's not always about the stories, contrary to what a lot of people will tell you today. Yes, stories are important. Yes, stories can be good. But sometimes all it takes is just a show with some good wrestling on it. And sometimes that's all you need.
That was just amazing to watch. And I can't say it enough. That was one of the few celebrations of being a wrestling fan at the best. And I can't say it enough. I loved every match from start to end. And just everything about that first pay-per-view was very awesome to watch.
And on that note, you guys, that is our review of the first ever All In show.
To move on to our next topic, we're going to be discussing our top 10 AEW women's wrestlers. And if it's all right, Ryan, since you started out our show, I would like to start out on number 10 and work our way up to the first.
Take it away, my friend.
All right. Well, I'll be honest. I didn't write down a list because to me, for like the past 5 years, you know, there's been these wrestlers and all that. It was kind of hard for me to make this list. Not going to lie, but you know what? We're here now, and I'm just going to go on what.
Wait. So you have a list or you don't?
In my brain, but not in my notebook.
Okay. As long as you have one in your head. Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. Sounds good.
All right. So my number 10, she's a day one from 2019. I'm going to go with Rio. I liked Rio's Japanese style wrestling. I liked her gimmick. I liked her theme music. And I just liked watching her in 2019. Even when she had like little stunts throughout AEW's course, like, I've always been a fan of the day ones, and she's one of them.
All right. Sounds good. I will definitely save my thoughts on Rio because, spoiler alert, she's on my list as well. So at number 10, this one might be a little, I don't want to say controversial because it's like lower down on my list, but it's really going to depend on what people feel, especially in the current climax that AEW is in with this woman. And that's Britt Baker. So Britt Baker, has recently, she had a little bit of a comeback against Mercedes, but she didn't have the greatest match with Mercedes. It was not great. But I have to give credit where credit is due to Britt Baker. Well, initially, I was not a huge fan of her in her heel run. I will admit this. I cannot deny that she got herself over. She was one of the first, like, she was the first woman signed by the company, and like, she was on TV while she was injured and getting herself over. And by the time, and this was during the pandemic, and by the time that crowds came back, everyone was doing the DMD chant. And that's how you knew that what she was doing worked. I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of her in-ring work. That's not to say that she's a bad wrestler. It just means that like her style isn't always do it for me. But again, going for me, why I have to have her on my list and more so towards the bottom is because she's, first of all, she is great at cutting promos when she's not just bearing the entire division. She's good at cutting a promo. Saraya was proof of this when she had the feud with Saraya. And seeing her getting herself over, the DMD chance, all that stuff, that's why she's on my list.
For my number 9, this may be a little controversial since she went to WWE, but I liked her run in AEW, and I will always say she had probably one of the better runs for a woman's wrestler there. I'm going with Jade Cargill because I could tell from the moment she entered AEW she was going to be a big name, and I liked that match that her and Shaquille O'Neal had together on AEW Dynamite. I could just tell she was going to be a star, and she may be with the other company, and kudos to her for doing well over there. I just liked her in AEW and all that run she had, and with Stokely as her manager. Oh my gosh, that was amazing to watch, and she was just a good wrestler to watch. She had the muscle and she had her own unique wrestling style, and I really liked it. She was willing to go into extreme matches. She did win a title at AEW, and
yeah, the longest reigning TBS champion.
She was awesome to watch. I loved her gimmick, and I couldn't leave her off my top 10 list.
No, man, for sure. That's a good shout, for sure. I have mixed feelings about Jade Cargill. So listen, when I first looked at Jade Cargill, like before I even knew who she was, like when she first came out, I'm like, oh, this woman looks like $1 million. And when she was in that match, like we were just talking about with Shaquille O'Neal, she had a superstar presence about her. And I think that is what's going to make her thrive in WWE right now. I had said it at the time, back when she had started in AEW, like give her like 2-3 years and she could be the biggest star in women's wrestling. Now that, you know, hasn't happened yet, but we have to see where her in-ring work takes her and what she's able to get out of being in WWE. It seems very clear there that they're going to be starting a story between her and Bianca Belair, because I believe they've been teaming together from what I hear.
Well, as of right now, they are the women's tag team champions right now.
Oh, they are the champs. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And who knows, maybe we could see a heel turn from Jade anytime soon. I'm hoping for that, but you know, it's up to them at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. So I've always got respect for Jade Cargill in that sense. And yeah, man, wish nothing but the best for her. And I wish nothing but the best for all wrestlers, no matter where they go. I just want, I wish everybody could succeed, because I love pro wrestling. I love all the wrestlers, man. You know, most of them anyway. So it's like, I want to see as many people succeed as they can.
It's just like the real world, you know, you had to leave another business to succeed somewhere else.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to go other places to find success. Absolutely.
You got to do what's best for your career.
And I respect Jade for doing business on the way out. Like she was undefeated for so long. And then you had the returning Chris Statlander from injury. Chris was able to beat Jade twice. That to me is always a big part of wrestling too, is like, if you're going to go to another company, like I don't think there is a single problem in losing on your way out to try and put someone else over. I think that's the right thing to do. So moving on to my number 9 on my list, I've got Thunder Rosa, former women's champion in AEW. Man, I was such a big fan of Thunder Rosa's work, like even before AEW. And I was so happy when Tony Khan had bought out her contract from the NWA just so he could get her on his roster. Like, oh my gosh, absolutely incredible. And I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the Lights Out match for both my number 10 and number 9 on this list, Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker. I think that was a star-making match for the both of them. Thunder Rosa went over in terms of the fact that she won the match. Britt Baker got over in that match. People found a whole new level of respect for Britt after that match.
I'm going to have her later on my list, but that match was a reason why I became a fan of Thunder Rosa.
And
you know, create Britt Baker into a superstar too at the same time. Like in that match, you know, there's always those matches that have helped one wrestler but not the other. This match helped both of them.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the thing, man. Like another one of my things that I care about in wrestling is being able to elevate people with you. One of my biggest criticisms with Britt Baker at the start of her run as like the heel was like she needlessly like tore down the entire division every time that she was on the microphone. And there's people in the other company that have done this too, with their divisions. But it's like, man, like if you just tear your opponent down, you've beaten a nobody. So if Britt Baker goes out there every week and says we have a nothing division, then what are you? You're the champion of a nothing division. So what good does that do you? Like you have to be able to elevate people with you. So that's just always been one of my things, man. But yeah, going back to Thunder Rosa, absolutely love Thunder Rosa. I cannot wait to see what she does next in AEW. Yeah, man, looking forward to it. Let's move on to your number 8.
All right. So my number 8. Now, she hasn't been on AEW recently. That's why I have her on the bottom of my list, but she's another day one, and I really want her to come back to AEW so bad, but I've been a fan of Penelope Ford since day one.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Super bad girl. I loved that gimmick. I loved her in-ring matches. I just loved her theme song so much. Like, it just, really saddens me to see
Penelope Ford is a victim of circumstances, man. Like, as time went on, and there's actually a lot of people on the roster, both men and women, that have suffered, like, were a prominent presence at the start of AEW, but now that AEW has grown and, like, they have so many bigger stars on their roster, it means that people have to go down the card more and more and more, and sometimes that means that some people get forgotten about and left to the wayside. And unfortunately, like, Penelope Ford, I'm afraid, was one of those people. But yeah, man, I'm glad you put her on her list, on your list. Shout out to Penelope Ford.
She was just awesome to watch from day one, and, like, even the match that her and Anna Jay, aka the Bunny, had, you know, with Ty Conti and Anna Jay, the, what was it? It was,
oh, like that death match or whatever on Rampage. Yeah,
like, that just brought a whole new side of her, and I'm just like, that's what I've been waiting to watch.
AEW women's, like, death matches, street fight matches, lights out matches have always delivered, like, every single time. Like, the one that they just recently had with, like, Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale, and I'm going to bring that up real quickly here. Oh my God, incredible. My number 8 on this list is Julia Hart, a former TBS women's champion, the youngest, I believe, as well. She was one of the youngest women on the roster as well. And going from someone who started out with with Brian Pillman Jr., the, what were they called? The Varsity Blondes.
Varsity Blondes, Griff Garrison too.
And Griff Garrison, yes. I was forgetting who the other one was. You know, we kind of felt like, okay, Julia's just kind of stuck here. Like, she ain't really doing much. And then she joins the House of Black, and it's like, ooh, what are they doing here?
And when she was at the Varsity Blondes, I was watching, and I'm like, okay, so they put a bunch of people together. They thought I could work, but it didn't. And then House of Black takes her in, and then I'll let you get into it, but we saw a whole different person.
We saw a whole new different person, and that person led her to becoming the TBS Women's Champion. And she... It proved herself in the ring as one of the best, you know, workers that they had in there, man. Like, between her and Tiffany Stratton, man, like, two of the best moonsaults in the game today, both performed by two women on the younger side of things when it comes to wrestlers. Absolutely incredible is Julia Hart. I got nothing but love and respect for that woman.
Funny enough, out of the Varsity Blondes, she was the only one to come up with a title.
Yeah, that's a good point. Isn't it Brian Pillman's in NXT now, right?
Yeah, and has he been doing anything? I haven't heard.
I don't know. I haven't heard anything either, so my guess is probably not.
Well, also, where's Griff at? We haven't seen him in like a year.
He's another victim of circumstances, my friend. Who's your 7? Yes, your number 7.
All right. Well, I did just talk about her and Penelope Ford teaming up. I'm going to have to go with AKA the Bunny. I liked her gimmick too with Butcher and a Blade, you know, helping them win matches.
Dude, shout out to the Butcher.
Oh, man. The Butcher and the Blade could put on good promos. And
I don't really care about the Blade, but shout out to the Butcher. Sorry, that's the last time I'll interrupt.
Anyways, you know how, like, when MJF would win cheaply and all that?
Yeah.
That's how the Bunny was to Butcher and the Blade. And
sure.
That I really liked it, and I even liked her character growth when she went with Penelope Ford and all that, and with that tag team match.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, they really have something cooking here in a way. Like, they had two of these OGs that have been with them since 2019, and I'm like, they really could do something if they booked them right. And I really liked Anna Jay, and, you know, life happens, you know, circumstances happen, but I was really a fan of her, and I was really fortunate to see them live on Dynamite and all that.
I watched Allie, was her former name before she was the Bunny. I saw some of her stuff over in Impact Wrestling, and she had a story there, actually with the Blade as well. I forget his name at the time, but, like, they were lovers, or, you know, becoming lovers on screen. So they had a story for her there. But that was how I knew of her. But then when she had came in as, like, the Bunny, I knew of her there too. And yeah, man, like, you talk about that tag match, just, oh my gosh, what a phenomenal match that was. Like, I still remember it to this day. So definitely did a great job there. Moving on to my number 7. I was talking a little bit about her before. I'm going with Willow Nightingale, former TBS Women's Champion in her own right, as well as a couple other people on my list. She's got like this bubbly personality on screen that to me reminds me of Bayley. So it's so easy for me to root for her because like I've always just like I was a huge fan of NXT Bayley, and that's a lot of the times what Willow reminds me of as well. So it was so easy for me to relate to that. And then for her to have this incredible feud recently with Chris Statlander, the Chicago Street Fight at AEW All Out, absolutely fantastic. One of the things that I thought AEW did very well over the summer was building up these different women's feuds besides just the main titles that, you know, that the women had. Like you had Thunder Rosa versus Deonna Purrazzo, and you had Willow Nightingale versus Chris Statlander. Like they had a strong foundation for their women's division, and their women's division, as we will talk about as time goes on as well, like it has not always been portrayed the greatest, and it's still not being portrayed to the fullest potential that it can be today. But my goodness, this summer they had kicked it up a notch, man. Like they were doing everything right. So yeah, that takes care of that rant. If you want to move on to your number six.
I feel like they can do so much with her, and they're just getting started with her, I feel like. Oh, man. I Jamie Hayter.
Hell yeah.
Oh, man. I won't forget what made me a fan of Jamie Hayter. You know how she was a sidekick to Britt Baker?
Yes.
During her title run?
Yes.
The moment she, like, you know, betrayed her and, you know, did her solo run, I'm like, wow, was that like a hidden ace up your sleeve, whatever, like in poker? Because like I feel like Jamie Hayter is their hidden ace, because she has one of the best gimmicks. That was very awesome to watch, and to see Jamie Hayter grow as a superstar in front of our eyes, even when she returns now from All In, like they have so much to do with her. I have high expectations of what they can do for her. She's a reason why I think they can take off.
She is one of their, like, she has become one of their top stars in the women's division for sure. Moving on to my number six, vaguely alluded to her before as well, but I'm going with Chris Statlander, another former TBS women's champion here on my list. Chris Statlander just looks like a star. She always has looked like a star, especially recently when she came back, man. Like she was just jacked, and like that feud that she had with Willow, like, oh my gosh, again, I thought it was a feud that did wonders for both women involved. I like that Chris got the win at All Out. That was pretty cool. I would like to see if she's going to go on a championship run potentially, perhaps in the near future, like on a heel run. Like, I don't know. I mean, it seems like Mercedes has things locked down with the TBS championship for a little bit. And I mean, I don't know. I think part of the problem with the women's division as well is like they have a lot of top women heel right now that they're very content on doing things with, like with Mariah May and Mercedes Moné. So it's like, all right, we can only have so many heels in the title picture at one time. So maybe it's not Chris's time yet, but perhaps her time will come again in the future.
Moving on to number five now, I think it is. Number five.
Yes.
Number five. Man, I won't forget when she came into the company at first. She was so awesome, and her latest run just made me love her more. Toni Storm. When she entered at Full Gear, if I recall correctly, was her first pay-per-view at AEW?
I can't remember, maybe.
We're going to have to go back and research this, but when Toni Storm entered, I'm just like, oh my, no way they got her, because when they were missing a link at that time, because, you know, the women's division can succeed more. They needed that superstar, and Toni Storm to me is that superstar in many ways. I really liked her persona. I really enjoyed her gimmick, you know, like the bad girl sunglasses, you know, jacket, whatever. Like that was just so awesome to watch as a face, and to see her go to the heel version from with the Outlaws and to her solo run with Mariah May as her sidekick before, you know, that whole All-In thing happened, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Toni Storm showed me how you can be a good face, a good heel, just be a flexible pro wrestler, you know, willing to do whatever the company needs you to do and be that superstar that you need for the division.
Yeah, hell yeah, dude. That was actually a really good take there. I appreciate that. I have a lot of thoughts as well on a lot of these people that you're talking about, but I'm also trying to like save some of my thoughts because like people that you're bringing up are also on my list. For example, at my number five is Riho. You had mentioned her before, a little bit lower on your list, but she was the first ever AEW Women's Champion. And like, she was so over in the beginning days of AEW. You got to go back and watch it for like those who don't know, because like if you watch Riho now, I feel like she always gets like mild reactions because it's like she's barely on TV. And then it's like whenever she is, it's like, oh, it's to put somebody else over so the crowd really doesn't care. But like, dude, she was so damn over when they first started this company, man. And like at a time when like they had brought in all these Joshi girls and like no one knew who they were. And Riho very quickly established herself, not just as like the girl when it came to the Joshi women, but just to like all of the women in AEW. Like Britt Baker may have been the first signing, but if you want to talk about like the first big star that was made in that company, I would argue that that person was Riho. And the matches that she was having with like Emi Sakura, Hikaru Shida, Nyla Rose, one of the more recent ones that she had with Willow Nightingale, like are all matches that stood out to me when it came to her and her run in AEW so far. And I really, really hope that we get to see more of Riho in the future, because I think she is just absolutely incredible.
Good take. And that reason right there just shows you why Riho was a big start in that women's division with AEW. Moving on to number four now. You mentioned her earlier, but I wanted to wait to make sure I got to her now. Chris Statlander, like,
yeah,
she was awesome. Like, I loved her alien gimmick at first, you know, when she was, you know, like being an alien and all
that. And like was kind of a part of, like loosely a part of the Best Friends.
Oh, that was awesome. Like when she joined the Best Friends, I feel like that helped her in a way, because she wasn't just, you know, the outsider anymore. She was actually part of a group that understood her. I really liked that. And I also liked it when she had that, I believe it was an arcade match, was it? Like, against Penelope. It was an arcade match with Penelope Ford, I think it was, if you recall.
Oh, man, I'm trying to remember this.
Like, we're going to have to, like, go into the DVDs.
Yeah, you might have, like, better memory of this than of me than I do. Dude, okay, AEW, get that Max deal done. I'm begging you. I need your archive somewhere so I can go back and look at some of this stuff.
We both need it because we love AEW. And
yeah, we love it, dude. Like, please put it on Max, all of it, your entire library. I'm begging you. Listen, don't get me wrong. When it comes to AEW, I've got like a decent memory. But look, man, I can't remember every single thing. I've seen so much wrestling over the years. It's hard to keep all that knowledge maintained in my small little brain. So yeah, man, even if like just to go back and refresh myself and be like, oh yeah, I do remember this. It was just locked away somewhere and unlock some memories. That'd be great.
But anyways, back to like, yeah. Chris Statlander. That was just very awesome to see how she can be used in more extreme matches instead of, you know, the normal woman single matches and all that. To me, that kind of helped her and raised the bar a bit for the women's division, knowing like how we can take this division to another level. And she was a day one, and I do like it now that she's a heel in today's AEW, and I just think they can do more with her again, and I can't wait to see what they do with her.
Moving on to my number four, I have gone with Timeless Toni Storm. She has had three women's title runs in her reign so far. One of them was like an interim reign that they later said was like actually classified as a legitimate reign. I hate the whole interim belt thing in AEW. I've always hated it. So Tony Khan can just kind of do away with that crap. Toni Storm found a way, perhaps more than anybody on this women's roster, to take like 2 minutes of screen time every week and get herself madly over. My goodness, this Timeless gimmick is, listen, I was always a fan of Toni Storm before the Timeless gimmick. I was a huge fan of her when she was in WWE, and I hated what they did with her there. When she came over to AEW, I was very overjoyed. I'm like, all right, my gosh, like hopefully this girl gets a chance to thrive. She has a women's title run. It's like, all right, this is cool. And then the Timeless gimmick happens, and I'm like, this woman is one of the greatest female performers of today's wrestling. My goodness, Toni Storm freaking gets it, man. And like this whole Timeless gimmick, this story, it's been so, so incredible. And like the Mariah May inclusion in there, and like getting to build someone else up in your own story. Like, that's, again, another thing that I love so much about wrestling is, again, elevating people with you. Look at what the timeless Toni Storm gimmick did for Mariah May.
You hit the nail on the coffin there. And moving on to number three, I think you are going to have her for number three too, but she was a newest signee in the last couple of years. Deonna Purrazzo, the virtuosa,
and yes, she is my number three. And now that I'm thinking about it too, I think we had the same number three pick for the men as well, because you had Darby, right? Yeah, we both had Darby. That's ironic. All right,
man, I will admit the first moment I enjoyed watching Deonna was, I think she was fighting for the title against Mercedes Martinez.
I believe it was a Ring of Honor women's championship match or something like that
before Tony Khan bought ROH, whatever. And you know, they would have like these little ROH gimmicks here and there. Like, I remember watching Deonna and I'm like, Tony Khan, get this woman to the division soon, whenever her contract is up, please. Because you know, at the time, the women's division was decent, but you know, they needed another superstar, because I think they just got Toni Storm, but they're like, they're missing another one, you know, like they need one more. And watching Deonna Purrazzo, I'm like, crap, I got to research her and like, you know, her matches. I saw her Impact one. I'm like, Toni Khan, don't screw this up. Please get this woman. And when I saw her come to AEW, I'm like, thank you, Toni Khan. You just made the smartest decision for the women's wrestling division, because Deonna Purrazzo had a heck of a run. She is very good as the virtuosa. She knows how to play the game, and words cannot explain how much I love Deonna Purrazzo, and you can agree with me on this.
Oh, 100%, man. I am right there with you, man. Look, I was a big fan of her run in Impact Wrestling. This was another thing. Like, I wasn't watching Impact every week, but I would watch, like, you know, loosely different things. And I give a lot of credit to Scott D'Amore when he was, like, the president of Impact. That man busted his back front and backwards, if that makes sense, to get this company back to the prestige that it once was. And part of that is with the Knockouts division. And there are two names in that Knockouts division that were so crucial to women's wrestling going on in Impact Wrestling at that time. The first was Jordynne Grace, and the second was Deonna Purrazzo. The two of them together were having like classic matches with one another. They would always go back to those two. That was like their female Stone Cold and Rock that they would always go back to. And I was a huge virtuosa fan. I love Deonna Purrazzo. I said for years that Deonna Purrazzo was the best women's wrestler on the planet, and that any wrestling company that had her would be lucky to have her. I think that it is a damn shame that NXT dropped the ball with her, that they let her go.
I really want to ask you, why did they screw that up with her?
Budget cuts, I believe. I believe that was the time when they were just like releasing people because they were doing the quote unquote budget cuts. Their loss is another company's gain, and that company was Impact. And then AEW picked her up. And like DJ, I was massively overjoyed when she was there. Obviously, I would have loved for her to beat Toni Storm for the title. That didn't happen. That's okay. She had an incredible feud.
Yeah, she did have a good feud, but at the same time, there is so much they can do with her. It's only a matter of time before I think they get her some more serious title runs.
Yeah,
I really do believe she can make a run for the TBS title once Mercedes, you know, done with her little rivalry, I believe.
Sure, and she could even beat Mercedes, potentially.
Hopefully, but you know, that would just be so awesome to just get Deonna a title belt, because when she's champion, hands down, she's one of the best in the game. That's all I'm saying.
100%. And I think that Deonna, like that feud, I mentioned it before, the feud with Thunder Rosa, that was a feud that didn't have a title. And that is like, I feel like one of the problems with AEW is the fact that it does have too many belts. They just did recently get rid of the FTW title, which I believe was an essential thing. Having feuds that aren't for championships with two big stars is very, very crucial. And I thought they absolutely delivered in that feud. And to all the people that were body shaming her online, bro, Deonna Purrazzo is a beautiful woman, bro. If y'all don't think that she's a if you think like she's overweight or like whatever you were body shaming her for, y'all are absolute idiots.
I'd just like to mention too, the two of us here, we're just, you know, trying to be respectful of everyone's opinion and all that. And, you know, you can say this and that, but at the end of the day, we like the wrestlers for what they do in the ring and out and what they do for the company. We just like what they do. And, you know, that's your opinion at the end of the day. We can't.
No. That's not even an opinion, DJ. Cause like, it's one thing to say that you don't like a wrestler, but to go and like body shaming athletes and stuff, like it's just not cool, man. Like,
yeah, no, it's not cool. But I'm just trying to say, you know, like here in this channel, we don't do that. And, you know, we just try to be respectful.
No, I get what you're saying for sure. If you don't like Deonna Purrazzo, that's your prerogative. But like, yeah, don't be like that, man. Don't be a dick. Moving on to your number two, I believe.
She is probably one of the reasons why the AEW's women's division is really good right now. And I really do think she has been one of the OGs as the women's wrestlers. Britt Baker, DMD. She has been one of my favorites from the moment I watched AEW. Her whole gimmick from DMD to, well, DMD's been her gimmick the whole time, but, you know, going from a heel to a face, like the pops you could get, she would get. It just impressed me so much. Her submission holder was so awesome, you know.
The lockjaw.
Oh, when she would get the glove on and look at the camera, I'm just like, now that is some charisma right there. Because not a lot of wrestlers do that necessarily.
Yeah, like she knows how to play up to the camera and stuff. Yeah, for sure.
And for promos, for men's side, it's MJF. For the women's, hands down, it's Britt Baker. I'm sorry, but like she has some of the best promos I remember. And like whenever she would be in Pittsburgh, the pop for her hometown, it was just amazing to hear. And to see the promos she could do as a heel and a face, that's what I looked for in a women's wrestler. And that's why she is one of my top two favorites. And that's why I loved her as a champion, and I hope that she gets a championship soon as well.
Yeah, no, massive, massive respect for Britt Baker, indeed. At my number two, this, you know, she's been called the ace of the women's division, and I think that is a perfect way to describe the number two on this list, and that is Hikaru Shida. Three-time women's champion, longest reign at 372 days. She carried the division through the pandemic, which, you know, for those who were watching during that time, man, like sometimes it was hard, you know, like, you know, watching a wrestling show without any fans and stuff could be kind of crazy. But yeah, man, like Shida carried that division through that time. And I thought, look, I get that Britt was always going to become a champion. That's fine. But I thought it was like such a dick move to have Shida go through the pandemic as champion, to come out of the pandemic, give her the new championship belt, and then 2 days later lose it to Britt. I thought it was such a shitty thing to do. Obviously, again, Britt becoming champion, I wasn't necessarily mad about. It was the way about they went doing it. Like, if you wanted to give a new belt out, just like have Britt win and then give her the new belt and be like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. You know, like we're coming into a new era. She introduces this new belt. But to like dangle that carrot in front of Shida to be like, oh, thank you so much, Shida, for all your hard work. And then like 5 days later, just lose. Like it never sat right with me. Maybe she doesn't care. Like, you know, maybe she was like, yeah, whatever. Like it's fine, whatever. But to me, it really left a really bad taste in my mouth.
I think we're not that far off, because moving on to the number one, I put Hikaru Shida as my number one. And a big reason for that was her pandemic run, because let me just tell you, that was not an easy time. And one of the reasons why I still like AEW to this day is because of what Hikaru Shida during that time, because the amount of good matches, quality matches, I might add, she put on, it was just amazing to watch. And watching her style, her technique, her, you know, new style of wrestling that we're not used to in American style, like the Japanese style she bought. It was amazing to watch. And to watch her run in the early days of AEW, it was just amazing. And even see her wrestle today still, it's awesome. But, you know, you think you and I can agree with this. We think she could do so much more, but you know,
absolutely.
But you know, they have limited this and that, but we're always happy to see when she's on television and fighting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Hikaru Shida has always, like, you know, whenever they've needed like a reset of the women's division, it's like, all right, put the belt on Shida, you know, and it's been that way like several times over now, in the same way that it was for Moxley too. Whenever you know, like he was the break glass in case of emergency guy. We talked about that last time. One of the match things that I loved with Hikaru Shida was her best of seven series with Serena Deeb. Unfortunately, it really didn't lead to anything though, which is kind of a shame because you would think like after something big like that, like you would follow that up with something else, but they just didn't at the time. Shout out Hikaru Shida. She is absolutely amazing, and she's always been one of my favorite women's wrestlers on the roster, if not for one other person that I have on my list at my number one, and that is who I believe is going to be like the biggest star in AEW when it comes to their women's division, and that's Jamie Hayter. This woman was set up for success on day one, similar to Mariah May. Like Tony Khan, I have realized, is a sucker in the women's division for putting a top women's star out there with a young protege for eventually that protege to become a big star in her own right. He's done it with Mariah May and Toni Storm. I believe he's doing it with Athena and Billy Starks in Ring of Honor as well. And Athena being like the longest reigning women's champion there. By the way, Tony, please get Athena on AEW. It is like long freaking overdue. She signed to a contract. Like I get like, yeah, she's in Ring of Honor, but like even just have her like have a cameo appearance every now and again at the very least and have her wrestle and defend the Ring of Honor World's Championship there. Like, dude, I don't know what their plans are for Ring of Honor, man, but like Athena is like apparently on the run of a lifetime right now. Like if I'm being honest, I haven't seen any of it, but I would love to see a Ring of Honor show and Athena being at the forefront of it.
Do an ROH title match like with Deonna Purrazzo versus Mercedes Martinez. That's all we ask for.
Yeah, so even just something small like that. Yeah, absolutely. But going back to, you know, what I was saying, though, he loves to do these protege stories. And the other big one was Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. But what I loved so much about this one, it was never about betrayal. Britt had her moment in the spotlight. And then it became time for her to be like, okay, I had my time. Jamie, it's your time now. And that match that she had with Toni Storm at that Full Gear where she won the title. Oh my gosh, that was such an incredible match with like so many great near falls. And like, I think I remember too, like that was the time that I had won our predictions championship in the prediction league. I won it off the back of Jamie Hayter winning. And she was like my, what we call a joker pick. I actually took this idea from like Wrestle Talks predictions, but like we would do this thing. I modified it a little bit, of course, but like we would do regular predictions where like each winner would get 1 point and then you'd get one joker pick and it would give you 3 points if you won. And I think it was me and Miles were the only people that picked Jamie Hayter. Everybody else had picked Toni Storm. And I had picked Jamie Hayter just solely on the fact that I wanted to see her win that belt. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go all in on this. If Jamie wins, I want all my points to be, I want to win with her. And I won the title that night, my predictions championship, with the fact that Jamie Hayter won the AEW Women's World Championship.
That is a painful day for me because I remember being so close and I remember what match killed me that night.
And you have yet to win that championship either.
We don't talk about that.
You'll get your time, man. You'll get your time. I know it.
Oh, I know. It'll be before the end of the year. But I'm bet on it.
Chris has become like the Orange Cassidy of our like division right now, because he's held on to that title since January. He won it at the Rumble and like at the WWE Royal Rumble and has successfully defended it through every single AEW pay-per-view this year. Like, it's insane.
It amazes me how he hasn't cheated yet, because I swear that somewhere between the lines, whatever, he's cheating.
He's like calling Tony Khan looking for results or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyways, back to that match. Yes. Like, that was a painful day for me because I remember being so close, but I remember thinking, because that was the match that costed me, Jamie Hayter not winning. I'm like, do I go Jamie Hayter here? And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to because I don't feel like they are. But sure enough, I was very happy for her. But when she won, I'm like, and I lost the night because not only did I lose that match, that was your Joker pick and you became our champ.
And Jamie Hayter as well at that time. Like, dude, AEW, this was coming off the back of Brawl Out. That pay-per-view, and AEW desperately needed some stuff that like the fans wanted, and the fans at the time didn't want Toni Storm as the champion anymore. People wanted Jamie. I wanted Jamie Hayter to be the champion. And like, I am so, and originally like Jamie was going to be the heel and Toni was the baby face, but they had like, I think at like one point it just like called an audible. Cause like Jamie was clearly the fan favorite and the one that everybody wanted to win. And when she won that match, I was like, right decision. Like, good job, Toni Khan. Like, I don't know if that was ever in your plans to make Jamie Hayter the champion, but if it wasn't, kudos for pivoting and kudos for giving her that. Well, DJ, I think that concludes our podcast for today, you know, going through all in, the first ever All In, giving you our top 10 favorite women's wrestlers. Very, very well done. Next time, you guys, on the next episode of our podcast, we are going to be going over the sort of the beginning stages of AEW in like what I like to call their pay-per-view era. So we're going to talk about, you know, Double or Nothing, that Fyter Fest show and Fight for the Fallen that they did as well in the middle of that time. And then also the first ever All Out. We're not going to necessarily, you know, we're not going to do like a pay-per-view breakdown of all four shows, but we're going to kind of talk about like some of our favorite matches from those shows and kind of like our thoughts on them and sort of my thoughts initially on like what AEW was doing at that time and how excited I was for the start of that promotion. And also, you guys, we are going to be breaking down our list for the top five best tag teams in All Elite Wrestling. We've gone through the men, we've gone through the women. Now it's time to get to the tag teams.
I'm super pumped for the next episode. And as usual, tell your friends, tell your family about us. And thank you for listening to us today.
Thank you guys so much for checking out this podcast. Remember, you can find us on Apple, Spotify, a bunch of other places where you guys can get your podcast. You can find us on YouTube. Heck, if you guys go on YouTube, you guys can find shorts that I've been putting up recently of like some of our podcast, you know, moments and stuff. Highly recommend you guys check those out. Very, very fun stuff. Thank you guys so much for checking us out, and we will see you guys in the next one.